Hello, everybody. This is Nina, and you are listening to the Virtual Weed Walk. So, how was the Virtual Weed Walk last week? Did you get to listen and try out some of the things that I had suggested? Could you get your coloring book out and paint some of the pages? Did you manage to go out and look carefully at the leaf shapes of the greens that you got from the groceries or your yard? Check out. It's fun to notice how Alternanthera sessiles, and I deliberately say this name. It's also called Sessiles joyweed, or better known around here as Ponnangani, how it looks so different from the Amarantha species that we also call it, get it quite often here, and we call it Araikirei and Sirukirei and Kantaikirei, etc. And actually, I'm sure that you must be having this in your diet now because there's a profusion of these greens right now. But if you have not noticed, I'm trying to follow a pattern here in the podcast. Pattern that is emerging, and it's not rigid, so we were going to break the patterns also. The pattern that I'm trying to follow is how the patterns of the scientific process. It starts with the observation. So we will do several podcasts on observations and the special features of the edible wild greens that you are very familiar with, like the Alternanthera, like in our previous podcast. And we will do a few more before we move on to the next step. So what I would really appreciate is that if you are doing this, if you are doing this exercise, give me feedback and, let me know what works for you, what would you like to hear more, and what helped. It is interesting to get feedback. Yesterday, actually this morning, I'm, all confused about my timing because last few days I have been attending a conference which started at 8:30 p.m. and ended each day at 2:30 a.m. So my yesterdays and todays got all mixed up. So this morning I got feedback about my coloring book. And there are several ones actually. I'm sharing with you the one which is the shortest. It says, "This is an amazing learning tool and beautifully done." Simple, right? But it comes from a scientific organization. So there are scientists from all around the world looking at the presentation about the edible weed and the walks that we do. And this is their reflection. So science has my back. And it's an awesome feeling. This week, I'll take a pause. And I'll tell you a little bit about this conference that I have been attending. And the discussion with the observation and the discussion with art and science. Art and science, especially, because the edible weed kind of epitomizes that area. But before that, I'll give you a little background of this conference that I'm attending, the organization, and what have you. This is called Ecological Society of America. So even though the word America is associated with it, because obviously it kind of started there, it is known as the largest group of trained ecologists and students of ecology in the world. And these people come from across the world. There are 9,000 members who are registered. And every year, this organization holds a meeting. And this meeting is usually attended by about 3,000 people. So 3,000 people, the meeting goes on in different states, primarily in the USA. And all these people congregate from all around the world. And there's madness in this 5 days where there's simultaneous talks from 8:30 a.m. till about 5 p.m. And after that, all the social gatherings and meetings. So you really don't have too much time for anything else. It's like, I feel that it's like, for me, a boot camp of science and ecology in all in one place. So this year, too, it was planned like that. And the planning starts pretty much by the end of the previous year's meeting. The planning for the next year's meeting starts because it's quite a large, arrangement. So sometimes around the end of the year, you get a call for papers. If anybody wants to, wants to present or present a poster in this scientific conference, which will be then scrutinized by a jury to see whether it's in the level of the ecological society to accept for their talk and meeting. And then once it is accepted, you follow the guidelines and the rules, and then you attend the conference. Your work is open to potentially 3,000 plus ecologists who can come and reflect on your work, give suggestion, give constructive criticism. Sometimes they are not constructive and you have to gulp it, but that's what it is. This is the process. So it's actually quite awesome. But then what do you do in the lockdown time? So we thought, by the time the end of the year came and there was a call for proposal, I wondered whether I'll be able to go, because it's a question of it's a lot of funds involved to go, to present, to stay. But I thought it is the right time for me to present the edible weed walk, edible weed coloring book, and the walks that are associated with it. This as a initiative, because this actually fits in very well to with the public science initiative in the tradition of outreach science. So how to proceed with this, and what do the rest of the scientific community thinks about this book in a more professional way? So I wanted to find out about it and proposed that I would give a talk, and this was accepted sometime in January, way before the lockdown. So what happened is that I was, the talk was accepted, things were moving fine, and then, March came and bang, everything was shut down. So Ecological Society quickly did some things. They created a virtual meeting with 3,000 plus people participating. How that, logistically they managed to do within such a short time, I have no idea. But before we go to the virtual meeting and my experience with the last few days with it, I want to give you a little glimpse of what the Ecological Society usually does in their normal years. So the normal years, as I said, about, 3,000 people lands up in a place. Can you imagine the impact of that place, even if it's a large city? Suddenly there are 3,000 people all rushing to a particular, building, all, crowding into the eateries and, all the hotels are booked, or all the, tiny little places around are all booked. So obviously it is a good impact, good business for the people in that town, because they get business. But Ecological Society had thought that it should be much more than that for a bunch of ecologists to come and to be present in a place. The town or the city, wherever the conference is held, should get back more than a few, days of business. So apart from the back-to-back conference, seminars and presentations, what they arrange is workshops and field visits where you connect with the local ecological initiatives and the local bodies who are doing them. And you get to not only learn from them, but as a professional ecologist, you get to reflect and give your opinion, so that they actually suddenly, for free, really, get a whole bunch of people consulting for them and putting their minds together and looking at what the solutions could be. So this is, the Ecological Society contributes to the town that they offer the conference. But any conference, can be very ecologically damaging. As you know, there's an impact, you know, there, whether you like it or not, there is, you know, coffee's been drunk and too much of food, maybe the wrapping paper getting littered. So there is impact. So there too, there are some very nice aspects that ESA, which is, you know, in short, it is called Ecological Society of America, had adapted over time. And I really observed and appreciated them. Them I'm going to share with you. One thing is, if you join, if you registered for the conference, then and the day you go to the counter, you get a bag with the materials for the for the entire conference. Over the years, you could opt out of the paper copy of the material, so you won't get a material, but you could still get a bag. But it comes with before, as you register, you know, much before, 3 months before you have actually gone physically, you would get an email that if you have a bag from the previous year, please bring it so that you don't have to take another new one. So if you have the previous year's bag, what do? You get a logo, a sticker, very beautifully done, which you can stick on your old bag. So over the years, your old bag has many stickers. So it becomes a very special bag. And not only that, you become quite a bit of, you know, show off, because you have gone to so many ESA, which is obvious from your, you know, bag with different logos. So, you know, in that even small way, it makes a difference that you are not using wastefully something which can be reused. In this note that you get 3 months before, when you register, you also get a note that please bring your own mugs for your beverages, so that there is no, you know, styrofoam used in or you know, throwaway of any sort. Even the green throwaways are still throwaways, so there is no throwaways of any sort used. And what I really, really appreciated, that ESA always arranged on-site daycare for children, so that their parents could attend the conference at peace. And I've actually seen one of my friends' two daughters grew up from the time they were toddlers. To each ESA I would go and I would see them grown up, and in the last one, the elder one actually presented. So that's the transition you get to see. So it kind of becomes a family. And yet it is really thoroughly, intensely professional group. And when you are presenting in a ESA conference or a meeting, you know that if you have done something wrong, if your work doesn't stand, holds the rigor of science, you will not be very kindly treated, even though you have made it through the gate of being selected as the paper to be presented. So this year, it was all virtual. So what happened is, I actually talked about it briefly in the last podcast. You had to, each person had to either do a video recording with their presentation or a voice recording with their presentation and send it. So that I did the voice recording. So then that gets uploaded, and whenever comes, gets to go and see that. Now, I felt, you know, what is the incentive of somebody else coming and looking at my presentation? I am not there. Nobody is looking whether they see half of the presentation or not. And, you know, it is not going to be that much fun. So I actually had taken the initiative to, you know, write to a few people saying that, you know, send to your, because you have to be registered in the USA to be able to even see that presentation. So it's somebody who is already registered, which means they are ecologists already. So I wrote to some ecologist friends, even though they are not even connected to this area, that please tell your colleagues and please share that, you know, people should go to this conference. To my amazement, even the plenary sessions were attended by 700 plus people. In, you know, they were tuning in. So in one of the plenary session that I tuned in, it was each day had a plenary session in the first thing that happened. So it was Rob Jackson. He is a professor from Stanford who works with the large scale data and predicting ecological impacts, advises energy sector. He is a very well-known professor. And as a part of the Q&A session, the question was how to make science more effective, the new people who are coming to science, how they should be more effective. And one of the statements that he made me kind of stand up, and I'm paraphrasing it here. He said that art makes us human. Science makes us human. Art and science together enrich both fields and perhaps makes us better humans. And he also spoke quite fondly about his interest in photography and poetry and how they help him reflect better and to be a better scientist. So he actually alerted the attention of the attendees of this plenary session that there is going to be an art and science session altogether the next day. So I kind of made sure that I have my alarm ready and my calendar ready that I don't miss this session. But before I even went to that art and science session, I attended several, like for example, how to get your, what kind of articles the editors are now looking for example. And to my amazement, I didn't even realize this. I did see a lot of graphic work in the scientific journals nowadays, but I did not realize that they are slowly, initially it became the scientific journals were allowing the graphic art to be in the part of the journal. Now they are also actually encouraging people more, requiring that your abstract, any journal article, that there is an abstract at the beginning. Abstract tells you all about, basically it's a summary of the whole thing. So if you read the abstract and you think, okay, this is what my interest is, you sit and read that whole article. Now, what are they doing? They are actually requiring the abstract to be graphic. So you look at the abstract, it's entirely visual. So then you come to the main article. So what it does, like suddenly ecologists becomes graphic artists. So one person actually asked that, like, I really don't have that skill to be, please don't require it. So the editor, he is telling that, no, absolutely not. Actually, we appreciate that you sit with your, Sharpie pen and paper. You draw something as you understand. Put that drawing up because that's more organic. That's more coming from you. It doesn't have to be, some graphic artist doing making a picture. So it's really reassuring. So in this session on art and science that I had attended, some of the things that there was discussing around art and science both explore and reflect upon their surroundings. So any division between them is artificial. And if you really look at, picking up a big name like Michelangelo, you don't consider him an artist only or a scientist only, because the education itself was such that it fed into each other. It still feeds into each other. It's only, when you go to a, meeting like this, when there are really people who practice science 24/7 are there to tell you that art is an integral part of science and must be integrated more, then you know that anybody who says otherwise is uninformed. And some of the things that is awesome things are happening apart from being a graphic requirement of slowly requirement, but right now encouragement to give graphic abstract, is that in some of the leading universities, Stanford, Duke, some other things were named, University of Massachusetts Amherst, in the previous one of the ESA also that they have done, what they are encouraging students is that your PhD, once you submit your PhD, you have to give a presentation. After you have finished all your, viva voce, you have defended your research, you have to give a presentation to the crowd. Now, that presentation is usually, it's a hall full of people and you're telling your slides and you tell people what you have done over the so many years that you have been, spending your time. Here, what they have done is they have given the option to the student, it's not a requirement, that you can present it in a skit or a dance or a music program. You still have to communicate what you have found out, your research, your method, your result, your observation to the crowd, but in ways which are completely different than what you think a science presentation is. And these changes are coming from the scientists. These are not the changes coming from non-scientists. So you know that, this is going to be implemented. There was a lot of discussion on how to encourage this, how to fund this kind of initiative. I felt very reassured with all this, because only a couple of weeks back, I've heard locally, I was told that, coloring book, after all, is not an important tool to learn for adults. And I know now for sure, these are the opinion of completely uninformed. And let me assure you, those of who you are coloring, who are coming to the weed walk, coming to the virtual weed walk, coming to this audible weed walk, following up and incorporating them in your diet, you are not only, you are not only addressing an integral need that is a diet, you are not only eating healthy, you are not only encouraging art, but you are doing science. And with that, I'll end here and I'll see you next time.